Derek Cranevelt, and you're listening to Xbox Game Passengers. Welcome back. It's been a long week, and this is the third episode that we've had in the last few days. So if you are still here, thank you for joining us once again. This is the second special episode of the week. So if you look back in the feed on Sunday, we chatted about, naturally, Microsoft's press conference, which I think we had a lot of cool things to say about it. We were pretty impressed by a lot of the things that they showed off. And there's also a pretty amazing deal that's happening currently on Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. So if you haven't jumped on that yet, you are crazy, and you can head to geekscape.net for all of the information on how to do that. It's still active as of publishing this, or as of recording it rather, so hopefully you got a few more days and you should definitely jump on that. We also saw, just yesterday, we saw a regular episode of the show. So my friend John and I played through a weird-ass hunting game called The Hunter Call of the Wild. And it was a pretty eye-opening experience. And hunting is weird, it turns out. And the forest only has two deers in it, and they can hear you from across the entire land. So definitely look back in the feed for that one.
Sounds incredible.
I know. That there, I'm so happy to welcome Josh Jackson to the show. Josh, you were a regular, always essentially, co-host on the Geekscape Games podcast, and I'm so happy to have you back. How are you doing today?
Yes, sir. I'm doing great, and it's good to be, you know, podcasting with you again and talking about games. It's like, it's been too long for sure. So
it's been too long. It's been so long, and it's the best week of the year to talk about video games, I think. I don't know. I feel like I get more excited about E3 than I do about Christmas. I don't know if I am alone in that sentiment or not, but I just love all of the new announcements and all the like I just get obsessed, and I like read everything and I watch everything, and I feel like I read the same article 10 times, but from a different writer, and don't get anything new out of it. And yet I keep doing it. Like, I just am so interested in everything that happens, and somehow haven't made it down to the Los Angeles Convention Center for the convention yet. It's hard to justify two trips to California within a 30-day period, because, of course, I'll be headed down for San Diego Comic-Con just next month. But you were there. You were there today and the last couple of days as well, actually.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to get in for all 3 days. Was pretty fortunate to be able to check out a lot of the big titles that were on display, as well as a lot of the smaller ones. Mm-hmm. But I feel like this is probably one of the most productive E3s that I've done, mostly because there wasn't as much big name competition on the floor, since
that's true.
EA doesn't do E3. They haven't done it for like the last couple of years. They have their own little thing in a separate part of the city. And then Sony was completely absent. Xbox's display was in a completely different building across the street.
Oh, really? Oh, in the Xbox Plaza, or?
Yeah, and like the Microsoft Theater that they have across the street from Staples Center.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so they had, Xbox had their own building, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, EA wasn't there, Sony wasn't there. So it felt like it allowed a lot of other companies to really take advantage of the space that they had, mm-hmm. as well as the big games that were on display, I feel like, got a lot more attention, since they didn't have to be divided up as much. Mm-hmm. So because of that, it was like, I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people feel like Square Enix kind of really ran away with a lot of the big announcements, since normally I feel like it would have been tied with Sony.
Yep, that's true.
And it would have been credited to Sony. But this year, and being on the show floor, like, usually only like Microsoft, Nintendo, and Sony have like the really big booths, and then from there the bigger publishers have like slightly smaller ones, and it kind of goes down from there. Mm-hmm. But I think Square Enix might have had the biggest booth this year, where they had a dedicated area to Final Fantasy VII, mm-hmm. which was as big as some of their booths. They had an Avengers area that was as big as some booths, and then they had a Final Fantasy XIV area also. So they took up a big, big chunk of one of the halls, mm-hmm. and it felt justified because they had so many huge announcements from their conference that people were mm-hmm. just buzzing about the entire time.
Well, it's interesting because I feel like looking back on last year, I feel like Square Enix, and maybe I'm remembering wrong, but I feel like Square Enix's conference last year was like 20 minutes long and it was barely anything. And then this year to fill, I think, over an hour with these huge announcements and like huge gameplay demos of you know, the Final Fantasy VII and blowing everyone away with a Final Fantasy VIII remaster, which I don't know if anyone really saw coming. Like, it seemed like they were firing on all cylinders this year, whereas last year I feel like I remember setting up for the, you know, I'm so excited to watch the Square Enix press conference. And then 20 minutes later, it was like some Final Fantasy DLC. And I was like, that's it. Like, it was a big year for them.
Yeah, I think I remember that too, because people were really anxious for more Final Fantasy VII news and they just didn't mention it.
Yeah, right. We didn't announce this. This doesn't exist. But not only now have we seen a ton of news from that. We have a release date. Is it next March?
Yeah, March 20th, I think.
Yeah, next March, we got an insane and insanely expensive collector's edition that's only available from the Square Enix store, which I know you've had great experiences with in the past.
Oh yeah, fantastic.
Let's just jump right into it. You got to play Final Fantasy VII, didn't you?
Yes, I did, which is probably, it kind of kills two birds with one stone, because that might have been my favorite thing that I played on the floor too. So
jumping into it, watching this gameplay trailer, you know, it looks beautiful. I like that we finally got to see some characters revealed that they seemed like they were keeping under wraps before. The combat, I don't know how I feel about the combat. The combat is totally different. I thought that they were more just adapting this game. It's not really turn-based anymore, is it? It's like an action RPG at this point. Like, how did you feel about that change, and how did it feel once it was actually in your hands?
Right. So first off, I do want to kind of preface it by saying I don't want to necessarily say that I disliked 7. I actually liked it a lot, but I'm definitely of the camp that isn't necessarily crazy about the game. I think a lot of the other Final Fantasy games were a lot better in a lot of ways. And with that said, I also really, really kind of disliked 13. Mm-hmm. But in some weird way, this game kind of marries the combat between Final Fantasy 13, Final Fantasy 15, and I think to a better extent, Crisis Core on PSP. It's actually more turn-based than you would think. Like, once you play it, especially in the boss fights where the fights are more drawn out and it takes longer to beat the enemies, mm-hmm. They kind of have this mechanic where basically the way that it works is when you start off the battle, well, with Barret, like Barret has his own set of attacks and Cloud has his own set of attacks, but since you're using Cloud most of the time, basically you could use his sword to block. So you'll approach the enemies while blocking, and when you get close enough to hit them, you will just like kind of mash out the buttons and he'll do an automatic combo, which is where the action portion comes from. And
okay.
And then you could also dodge freely and everything. So that's kind of where the comparisons to Crisis Core and Final Fantasy 15 comes from. And that's where the action RPG portion of it comes from too. But the regular attacks are really weak. And every time you hit them, you fill up an ATB meter, which is supposed to be like the substitute for the active time battle from the original Final Fantasy VII.
Sure.
Yeah. And have you ever played 13?
I have never played 13. I think I have owned multiple copies, which I like a lot of games, and I don't think I've ever unwrapped it.
Right. So 13 also had a similar mechanic where the basic attacks would fill up what they called the ATB meter also.
Okay.
And as that meter fills up, in the demo, it was split into two halves, and once you filled up one half of it, you could pay meter to activate either a special ability. Some of the abilities were new attacks, and some of them were old limit breaks. Like one of Cloud's was Braver, which I think was his initial limit break.
Okay, yeah.
And that could be activated now anytime when you want to use an ability. And then he had a few other ones, which I'll talk about the mechanics of those in a second when we get to more detail of the boss fight. So as that meter fills up, you have to pay that meter to use special attacks that fill up or that do more damage. And if you want to use items or cast magic spells, you also have to pay a segment of that same meter. Mm-hmm. So using your basic attacks to build the meter is kind of a big part of it while trying to avoid damage. And one thing that I found really interesting too is that I feel like the items are going to be a lot more important going forward, because when you cast magic spells, the magic spells still cost MP in addition to the ATB meter. So it's like you have to pay two different types of currencies to cast magic spells, where if you're using an item with a similar effect, it'll just cost that.
So there's quite a bit of strat.
Yeah, like even though, you know, the demo itself doesn't go too far in depth, it's still the beginning of the game. But sure. Even in that, I was kind of feeling like in my head, I was like, okay, I want to use items for healing so I could save my MP for elemental attacks to exploit their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Like my mind was already kind of going to those things. And I can imagine that when the main game gets to know a lot more detail, those kind of factors are going to come up a lot more. So that was probably the biggest change that was the most interesting to me. But when we got to the boss fights, the turn-based aspect really did become more of a more of a, I guess, a pronounced feature. So basically the way that it works is that your party members, in this case, it was only Barrett and Cloud, but you could switch between the three party members or whichever party members are with you on the fly and take direct control of them. And then so once you do that and you have your other partners fighting automatically, you can issue commands to them. And when you do go into the screen where you issue commands, the screen kind of freezes. And then from that point, you just select, do you want to use an ability, a magic spell, an item, and that kind of thing. And in that respect, it's almost identical to what the original Final Fantasy VII was, where, you know, the combat's kind of still and it gives you that moment to kind of select the attacks. So once the fight started getting longer with the scorpion boss at the end of the demo, there was a lot of that where when Cloud was getting knocked back or the enemy was doing a attack that was kind of protecting his immediate vicinity, I would switch over to Barrett. Mm-hmm. And since Barrett can use his gun, you would hold down the attack button. He would automatically just keep shooting until his arm overheated. So I would build up ATB meter and damage with Barrett's gun while Cloud couldn't get close. And at the same time, I would kind of freeze the menu and have Cloud like heal or prepare an upcoming attack that would be able to hurt the enemy once the enemy's attack ended.
Right.
So in that respect, it did, even though, you know, the whole thing is not controlled through the turn-based mechanic, it did come up with a pretty interesting way, I think, to kind of blend the action RPG elements with the classic turn-based that a lot of people were like fell in love with back when they first played Seven.
So you feel like it does a good job of the mixture then?
Yeah, I think it does a real good job of kind of combining those two elements. And another thing too, though, is that when it came to the boss fight, another aspect that was, a lot of RPGs have it now, but the first time I really saw it be as a popular or like a featured mechanic was in 13 also. But in 13, the enemies would have two different meters. They would have a health meter, and then they would have a stagger meter, which was essentially a meter that built up when you attacked them consecutively. And once it filled up, they would get knocked out. And while they were knocked out, you would have a damage multiplier on top of them not being able to act for a while. Mm-hmm. So that's like the main mechanic in this game too, in the boss fight.
And is that only in boss fights?
The regular enemies have that meter too, but they would die before you would fill it.
I see. Okay.
So it was kind of a non-factor, but basically, even when you would use magic that the boss was weak to, it wouldn't do a whole lot of damage. But each character, both Barrett and Cloud, had abilities that would specifically focus on building up that stagger meter instead of focusing on damage. So the whole strategy around it was to build up their stagger meter until they're knocked unconscious temporarily. And once they're unconscious, that's when you would unleash your limit breaks and unleash your elemental spells that they're weak to, because it would do like 10 times the amount of damage as it would do otherwise.
I see.
So it's kind of performing a constant flow of damage is a core part of the combat system, which wasn't present at all in 7. So that's going to be the biggest change. Mm-hmm. And I know 13 is a, both from the way that the ATB meter is handled and from the stagger mechanic, those are both taken directly from 13. And I know 13 is a really polarizing game. So I thought it worked well the way that they brought it all together as someone who wasn't wild about either game originally. And I like the way it turned out. But I've already been seeing, and when I've talked to some people, it seems like people who love 13 are like ecstatic. And then when I talk to people who hate 13, now all of a sudden they're really like worried that they're not going to like 7, the 7 remake.
Right. Well, and what, like, one question that I would have is, what do you think, like, I think that this kind of major change to the combat system, I don't think that it was expected. So, like, what do you think the idea around doing that is? Like, is it to modernize it a bit more? Is it to make it too attractive to, you know, obviously a lot of people that played it in the 90s are going to go back to it anyways for nostalgia purposes, but does this make like more action oriented type of combat, doesn't it make it more approachable to maybe younger people that have never played the game before, whereas the slower pace of the full turn based might turn them off?
Well, I think that people who've never played it before and this will be their first time playing it, I think they'll be more drawn into it, but not necessarily from the combat, but the story. Like, there's already, even in the demo, there was a couple of parts in the story that were being shown earlier than what they how they happened in the original game. Like, Cloud started having like flashes of like hinting towards Sephiroth. I mean, anyone who's played it would have known it, But if I remember correctly, he wasn't, they didn't even come close to hinting at Sephiroth at the very beginning of the game.
Okay.
And like stuff like that. So I feel like the narrative is more fleshed out. Barret already seemed to have a lot more personality than he originally did. Like some of the avalanche people that are with you in the beginning of the game, like they actually feel like full fledged characters now. And some of them are given pretty significant roles in the beginning of the game compared to the original. So I think story-wise, it's going to pull in new people even more. As far as the gameplay, though, I feel like it's hard to say on gameplay alone, because even though it's action-focused, it did feel kind of slow, like a little bit slower than I would have liked. And Final Fantasy 15, which was, of course, the most recent mainline Final Fantasy game, that one had a similar playstyle, but it was a lot faster, mostly because the character could teleport at will pretty much to wherever he wanted to be. And since this game is such like a defensive, it's such a defense focused battle system where you pretty much always have to either be guarding if you can block or be far away if you can attack from ranged positioning.
Right.
That it did, like, one of the, probably the only negative that popped in my head that I was thinking, you know, some of these fights feel like they're, especially the boss fight when he kept pushing me away from him when I was trying to use Cloud. I was like, this like battle system feels like it get really, like, unless you unlock abilities that make it faster later, like, this is going really slow because I'm spending so much time just blocking while slowly approaching him until I could hit him and hope he doesn't knock me away right away.
I see.
So,
yeah. So if that's a always necessary thing, that's going to get old fast.
Pretty much, because I tried to just run at enemies and I was taking so much more damage than if I was holding the block button.
Right.
And since MP and ATB meter are such, you know, valuable currencies when you're trying to fight, using it recklessly is like, and needing to heal all the time could be a problem. But overall, though, I think since turn-based battle systems are such a rare thing these days, that updating the battle system is almost a necessity to draw in new people, because I feel like turn-based is so niche now outside of like Pokemon that it would be hard to drag in new audiences.
And especially pairing it with, like, I mean the game looks gorgeous, so pairing this insanely slow and completely unpopular at this point type of battle system with this completely modern looking reimagining of this game, I feel like would be quite jarring for people that picked it up maybe just, you know, not knowing a lot about it based on the trailers or based on the hype or whatever. I don't know how stoked they'd be at the battle system at that point. So that makes a lot of sense.
Right, yeah.
One thing that I want to ask as well, for instance, you saying you weren't a huge fan of Final Fantasy VII. So what makes your time with this, like you said, it was potentially your favorite piece of E3 this year. How does it go from the original being not something you loved to being such a treasured piece of your experience this week?
I think it was mostly because I was so surprised at how many different concepts that they pulled from different games to kind of create this new whole that it was designed around. So I just thought, like you were saying in the beginning, they kind of teased it a little bit in some of the trailers, but you couldn't really tell what was going on a whole lot. So no one really knew exactly how the gameplay was going to work. And then actually playing it and seeing, oh, this concept is pulled from this and this concept is pulled from this. Let's see how they bring it all together while still keeping it true to Final Fantasy VII. Like, love it or hate it in terms of the Final Fantasy XIII mechanics, but I thought they did a really good job of kind of blending the best parts of so many different sources to make something that feels original while still feeling familiar enough at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to get the first class edition of the game?
No.
No? Because of the cost or because of the Square Enix store?
No, because of the Square Enix store. I slightly considered it, and then it said Square Enix store exclusive, and I was like, no. Mm-hmm. No. Like, for anyone who...
So just the regular edition for you?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, for anyone who might not have listened to that old show at this point of our Geekscape Games podcast, it was I had ordered a Final Fantasy 15 Collector's Edition, a Kingdom Hearts Collector's Edition, and like a Lightning Returns Collector's Edition, all three of them. Never got to, or either got lost in the mail or never got to me. The Final Fantasy 15 one in particular didn't ship for like 4 months, but they had charged me the $200, $300, and I called them three times and they kept saying it was in the warehouse and it would ship. And then they finally shipped it when I told them I wanted to cancel it. But at that point I told them, no, for real, like, why'd you ship it now? Just cancel it. So they took it back and gave me my money back. And that was the last time I'll ever deal with them. So
dang. So you have to get one on Craigslist then.
Yeah, I guess so. I could have tried to steal the one they had on display at E3, but I don't know how far I would have gone. I mean, if I was using someone else's badge, I would have tried it.
Not yours with your name on it?
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to get banned for future years, right?
Right, exactly. They might come out with something better that I want to take.
Yeah, that's fair. Is there anything else you want to say about Final Fantasy, or are you ready to jump on to the next?
No, that was pretty much it. I mean, the only other thing that I didn't mention was that the bosses can like pin one character down and you'll lose complete control over them.
Okay.
And you have to use a different character to kind of get them off of them before they do like a huge like damaging attack on the one that they have trapped, which I thought was cool. It makes the whole thing just feels a lot more cinematic overall, and I think that's probably what they're going for. It almost seems like they want to make a Advent Children style Final Fantasy VII game.
Okay. That's a good way to put it. I feel like, yeah, like watching the gameplay trailer, I was just like, I still pre-ordered it 2 years ago, but like, I feel like I just wasn't down for that. But hearing these firsthand impressions, I feel like I'm more open. And I don't even remember it that much. Like I played it when I was like 9 years old or something. Like, I don't know why. Like, I think it feels big for me because it's like the first big RPG that I remember ever actually playing all the way through. And so I just feel like I want that experience again. But if I want that experience again, I could play it on my cell phone. I could play it on my PlayStation Classic. I could play it on literally anything. Mm-hmm. And I haven't. So why not be open to this new version of it?
Yeah, for sure. And the only thing that I'm really worried about is the whole interview that came out this week where they said that they are still not sure how many parts it's going to be.
9 parts over the next 40 years.
Yeah. At this point, just hold out for the PS5 complete edition.
Do you think it could be PS6, PS6 exclusive, yeah, at this point?
15 disc remaster for $400.
Square Enix store exclusive. Yeah. So with E3 itself, as someone that has not been there, because you've been going for quite some time, right? You've been to many E3s.
Yeah, I think the first year I went was back when security was lax and you could just tuck a lanyard in your shirt and people would just assume you had a badge underneath. Like that was
not these days.
That was when the Wii first came out, and today there's like a double ID check. And
really, how does the, because obviously it's changed a lot, and we have, like you mentioned before, there's like so many of these big players are not there anymore. Like, how does the floor, and it being open to the public, how does the floor feel these days versus what it would feel like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago?
Well, before it was like a handful of games were fighting for all the attention pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to play any one of those games, you would still have to line up early, and that would probably be most of your day. Okay. And it made it worse because I feel like, I don't know what they've done. I haven't noticed that they've done anything different, but I know in the early days, wait in line used to be so much longer because they would just shove press appointments in front of you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you'd be in line for like 2 hours, and then when it's almost your turn, they would shove like 3 or 4 groups of press right in front of you, and it would add another hour to your wait.
I have been that press at events, and you never don't feel like a dick when you do that.
But I think what it is actually is a lot of the big publishers now, they have private rooms for press.
Oh, okay.
So that could be part of it. But yeah, for whatever reason, the waits don't feel as bad. Maybe because I'm more used to it this year and I kind of knew what to prepare for since this is the third year that they've invited the public. But basically the way I was trying to approach it was just for the big stuff, go early. And then after the public was let in, just go to a lot of the smaller booths.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, as soon as the public was let in, every big game was like a 4 or 5 hour wait, which at that point was pretty much the rest of the day.
Yep.
And some of the stuff, even before the public got in, some of the games, I think I waited like 3.5 hours to play Zelda before the public got in.
Really?
Yeah. And it was just crazy. That was one funny thing that I noticed about E3 is for whatever reason, Nintendo didn't think people wanted to play Zelda. Because they had, according to their way that they set up their booth, they had 2 big games. It was Luigi's Mansion 3 and Pokemon.
No way.
And then they had a small section that had every other like miscellaneous game. And so they had a sign that said Zelda and other games, this line. And you would wait in that line to get into the booth, and then you would get into individual lines for each other game you wanted to play.
So they had a bigger presence for Luigi's Mansion than they did for Zelda?
Yeah, and I guess they probably figured that it's a remake of an old game that's been ported a handful of times already.
Yeah, but not like this.
Yeah, but it's like on the first day, Zelda was mixed in with all the other games, but then there was this massive line that cut through the rest of the booth because everyone was trying to play Zelda.
Oh my gosh.
So on the second day, they just separated Zelda and put it in its own line and put all the other miscellaneous games. So that was nice, because if you wanted to play the miscellaneous games, you literally could just walk in and play them with no lines while all the Zelda people
cared about them.
Pretty much. Yeah, well, like Zelda was shoved into its own space now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Zelda was the, I think both because the demo was long and they didn't have as many units, whereas Luigi's mm-hmm. Mansion and Pokemon both had like giant rooms that had probably like 60 screens in them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But yeah, I think, but because of the length of the demo and the amount of people trying to play it, Zelda was like one of the worst lines.
Jeez.
And that's outside of like the, you know, like your Cyberpunks and your Borderlands mm-hmm. and all the other heavily promoted games. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Microsoft, for instance, being in a different building. Did you make it over to that area as well, or did you stick to kind of the main show floor?
I did, but I didn't realize that Microsoft actually closed earlier than E3.
Okay.
So I was trying to, I went over there towards the end of the day since it was in the direction that my friends and I were parked at. And when I stopped in, they had a few things open, but nothing that we particularly wanted to see. They had us watch some weird, like 3D, like 360, like 360 degree screen promotional trailer for Mixer. And then once we watched that, they're like, all right, now you can go play Gears 5. And then we went to, we walked into the room with Gears 5 and they're like, oh, actually we closed the line because we're, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Well, I got to watch people play Gears 5, so that's nice.
Yeah. So no opportunity to check out like the Project X Cloud demos or anything like that?
No, I was really trying to get in to play Battletoads because I heard Battletoads was available, but yeah, but they had already shut everything down by the time I tried to go in there.
What do you think of the Battletoads art style? Because I've heard a lot of negativity about how the Battletoads look at this point.
I don't know. I feel like it's one of those things where we haven't seen them in like 20, 30 years. So people have a certain idea of what they should look like. But, mm-hmm. you know, kind of back what we were talking about with Final Fantasy VII, you know, things do have to be updated to a degree to kind of modernize it. So
sure.
I personally kind of think that they look like what I would expect from, like, say, a Saturday morning cartoon version of Battletoads. And I know there was an actual, if I remember correctly, they were on a cartoon at 1.2 back in the day. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't look any different from, and maybe this is adding fuel to the fire to the people who don't like it, but to me, it just kind of looks like the animation you'd expect nowadays on TV anyway, like your Ninja Turtle, the modern Ninja Turtles and all that. So I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, that's fair. Just... No, it looks fun. I mean, what are those things called? The like wall, the hover things. Those are bad.
So no one's ever getting past that level.
No, exactly. I've still never passed that level.
I wouldn't be surprised if the game just crashes because they didn't actually program any levels after that.
Yeah.
So
right.
if you beat it, it just doesn't know what to do and it just shuts off.
You just unlock like 1,000 achievement points and then it hits the credits. That's the end of the game.
Pretty much.
They don't need anything else. Yeah. Although like, I feel like that can't be as hard as like Cuphead or something like that, obviously. So people beat that. So yeah. they gotta build the rest of the game in there.
Yeah. I just beat Cuphead too. Like the other day, I was really happy.
Oh shit. Really? Yeah. Cuphead is, I played it I've only played it like in like one sitting of it, but I played it for an hour and a half at a friend's house and it is hard. It is so, it's beautiful and the animation is great. And the game, and it's never like, you're never like, oh, this was cheap and that is why I died. Like, it is always your fault, but it is very challenging. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, have you ever played?
It's cool though.
Speaking of, have you ever played Catherine by chance?
I have started Catherine, but I don't really remember it and I did not play very much. But I know that you just started it recently, didn't you?
Yeah, I finished it too the other day, but I thought of it too because I must have beat it just in time because the next day I went to go play the demo. It's not exactly a sequel, but it's like an updated director's cut version with extra characters and endings and stuff. And I got to play that mm-hmm. on the show floor too. And they were giving away these little, the little horns that the lambs have or that the sheep have in the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was cool, but yeah, like that was one of the ones that I'm really into also. Like if we're talking about favorite games of the show, mostly because of, not necessarily because the new version did anything different. Like there's new blocks and new puzzles formats that are mixing it up, like for people who've played it already, but it's just, and it's adding extra story mostly to their backstories and that kind of stuff. But
what platforms is that new version available on?
It's going to be, if I remember correctly, it might only be PlayStation, but let me see. I thought I heard someone mention Switch, but I don't think they were advertising that.
Mm.
But yeah, the original was on 360 and it's backwards compatible, which is how I was playing it.
Right.
But this one, it looks like it's that's the other platform. It's on PS4 and Vita.
PS4 and Vita, no way.
But I don't think the Vita.
I didn't know there was still Vita games.
I don't think they're bringing it out in English or in America.
Oh, okay.
It looks like it might just be a Japanese.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah, it says Japan only on Vita. But
yeah, yeah.
Okay. But yeah, like anyone who hasn't played it, especially, I don't know, it might be on Game Pass, like tying into your normal episodes, but like full.
I don't think it is. I think I do own it on Xbox 360 though, because it looked interesting and I bought it at one point when it went backwards compatible, but I don't think it's on Game Pass.
Yeah, but that has my full recommendation.
Cool. And then back to like the floor and stuff. One thing that, like, for someone that's not been, and now that, you know, people that are not press or industry members have the ability to go, for someone that would, for instance, have to buy tickets, like, would you recommend going to this, or is it too, like, is it just you're mostly waiting in line and you can mostly see and hear everything? Obviously watching stuff from home doesn't match up to playing it, but do you think it's worth the trip and worth the ticket, or do you think that you can get most of the feel of what everyone's excited about and what the big announcements are without actually even being there?
Well, see, it's hard for me to say for sure, because I feel like if I had never been to E3, I would probably be super excited to do it. So maybe this is me speaking from someone who's been lucky enough to be able to go a bunch of times. But to me, it's not really worth it.
It's like old hat to you now.
Yeah, like,
okay.
I know the ticket's really expensive. It's like hundreds of dollars. And
okay.
And on two of the 3 days, you can't even go in until it's already halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like you can't go in until 3 or 4 hours after they open on the first 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third day, you can go in at the same time as everyone else. But like you were saying, there's just lines everywhere and they immediately fill up as soon as those doors open. And like, for example, yeah. I tried to play, like today on the last day, I got to play Borderlands 3 before they opened, luckily, because I was able to get in a little early and they had set up ahead of time. And then afterwards, I checked out Cyberpunk. And the third game I wanted to check out today, which was like the three games that were on my top priority list today, were Borderlands, Cyberpunk, and Doom. So I got out of Cyberpunk, and I think it was like 20 minutes after they opened, and I walked over to Doom, and Doom was already capped for the entire day.
Gosh, yeah.
So it's like, you know, if hundreds of dollars, and my main thing was, oh, I want to play Doom, and then I got capped out of the line.
Pretty much not going to happen. Yeah.
So to me, I guess it really depends what you want to see, because if you kind of just want to see a bunch of different things, it would probably be more worth it. But if you have your heart set on, say, Final Fantasy VII or Pokemon or Doom or Cyberpunk, like, you have to be willing to like trample people to get there first in the first couple of groups. Otherwise, you're probably going to be locked out for the whole day and you're going to feel pretty disappointed.
Right. Yeah, so watch at home.
Yeah, watch at home unless you want to play all of the like waifu games and stuff, because those booths are pretty empty. I think a lot of people are embarrassed to play them in public.
What's the swag situation like?
This year they seem to be pretty, again, like I was saying earlier, I can't put my finger on what was different this year, but this year just seemed a lot more organized in terms of that kind of stuff. Like, for example, I think Sega was the area that was giving out the most cool stuff, I thought. And it was all relatively easy to get. You would just play a demo. They would give you a redemption ticket, and then you could go turn in that ticket at any point throughout that day. So everyone wasn't rushing at the same time to claim them either.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And I think Namco Bandai did the same thing with their demos, where if you played it, they would give you a ticket and you could just either go if you were planning on playing more than one demo, it made more sense to just kind of grab all the tickets you wanted all at once and take them up all at once instead of doing it one at a time or rushing to get the free stuff as soon as they hand it out. But yeah, and a lot of the booths had some really cool stuff. Like, I got this psycho mask from the Borderlands booth that's painted in a certain way that really does look like cell shaded, but in real life.
Yeah.
And just a lot of like stuff like pins and t-shirts and that kind of stuff. I think
cool.
Luigi's Mansion gave away a little pocket flashlight, which I thought was pretty cool.
You'll need that.
Yeah. But overall, it seemed to be handled pretty well. There wasn't any kind of mass hysteria. I remember in the days where they would get on like a megaphone on a stage and just start throwing shit at people, and everyone would start like jumping on top of each other trying to reach it. So, yeah, those days are long gone.
those days are not over in San Diego. San Diego is still a bunch of vultures, but. So that was some good practice, I guess, for what next month will bring.
Oh yeah, it's like a training ground.
The biggest thing I want to know is obviously Cyberpunk. Witcher 3 is like one of my favorite games. Cyberpunk looks amazing. I just sort of pre-ordered the $350 collector's edition of the game, and I still need to convince Michaela to not make me cancel it.
I was just going
to
ask if Michaela knew about that.
Not really yet, but you just, you know, I'll have to break the news before this releases. But you know, how can I sell it to her? Tell me about the Cyberpunk experience.
I think the coolest thing about it, because it wasn't a hands-on demo, so I wasn't actually able to play it. But from what they showed, I thought it was really cool how, and a lot of games do this where they give you different ways to approach similar objectives. But the way they really displayed it almost made it feel like your playstyle was going to almost make it a completely different game, which is probably my biggest takeaway. Mm. So they said they're going to have multiple types of playstyles, but they only had two in the demo. And so one of them was like a super strength, was like a character with a robotic arm that gave them super strength. And with them, they were pretty much playing like in your face, guns blazing. They were taking more damage. They were ripping turret guns off of the turrets and using them manually against enemies.
Oh, cool.
They were ripping open doors with their hands that otherwise you'd have to either hack or find keys for.
Mm-hmm.
And it really presented itself as it really presented the character as being like this really overpowered, almost like Hulkish style character that was just like mowing through the environment and mowing through bad guys. And it was just really, really cool. It almost made it look like a melee focused, game, even though from The Witcher and from how they presented Cyberpunk, we know that there's so much more to it than just like a beat 'em up, but they give you the option to play it that way if that's what you want to do. And then the other option that they had was the hacker, which does a lot of the things you would expect it to in terms of being able to say like shut off security cameras and that kind of stuff to distract enemies.
Yeah.
But since the world, and I think this is how I'm going to play it if I ever get around to playing it, because I still never touched The Witcher, even though I've owned it since almost since the day it launched almost.
Now you can get it portably.
Yeah, I know. The Switcher. That's like, I kind of want it, but then, you know, I never played the other one, so why would I play this? But yeah, like since in Cyberpunk, everything is controlled by robots and machines and everything's computerized, the hacker looked like it was so much fun. Like they pretty much played a complete stealth route with the hacker.
Mm-hmm.
And one interesting thing too, is that the more you hack, it could affect the story in a degree. So in one point he hacked the security system, but then they had like, I guess their own hacker who was monitoring their servers and saw someone got into it. So now they were watching you closer because they detected that somebody accessed their system.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. And it was just like a lot of smaller things, like the area that they were sneaking through focused on enemies that were really like bulky and muscular, like they were really into working out and all that kind of stuff. So it was like in this gym pretty much. And in one part to distract the enemies, one guy was doing like boxing sparring with a robot, and they hacked the robot to like legit punch the guy. So when the robot punched him, all the people around him were like, oh shit, what happened? So they start walking up and checking out the robot and making sure the guy's okay. And then there was another one where a guy was doing bench pressing, and I guess since the bench was also controlled by computers, they hacked the bench and the bar just collapsed on the guy's neck. And it's just so many cool different ways that, since, like, you know, like I mentioned, there's a lot of games that let you hack stuff, but since everything's run by computers in this game, there's so many different things you could hack that you've never been able to hack before.
Yeah.
And that's in addition to the enemies themselves, because since they all have robotic augmentations, there was parts where you could hack the enemies to shoot themselves. Like, you take control of their arm and make them shoot themselves while they're like freaking out and trying to get control of their body back. There was something else that they did that I can't think of, where they hacked the guy and they made him like, I don't even remember, but they made him kill himself in some other weird way.
This was all like gameplay, right? Like, it wasn't like a cinematic trailer, like what they showed during the Xbox press conference.
Right. It was live gameplay. They just had it debugged so that he was taking damage, but he couldn't die. Like, if his health hit zero.
Sure.
That was like the only major modification.
Okay. How did the presentation look and feel compared to like what they've been showing in the cinematics? Like, does it look as high caliber as I think what everyone is expecting at this point?
It looks pretty up there. Like, it's not quite as good, but it's also not a huge glaring downgrade either.
And it's still a year away.
Yeah. like in both visually and presentation wise and the way that the conversations and all that kind of stuff take place, it reminded me a lot of the more recent Deus Ex games.
Oh yeah, okay.
Like, so like if you played Mankind Divided, that's kind of what to expect, I would say, both from a graphic standpoint and from a UI standpoint and that kind of thing.
I'm down for that.
Oh, one cool thing too I wanted to mention that the hacker could do is they had a cord in their wrist that they could plug in to the enemies remotely. But they had a melee attack too where the cord would like heat up and it would just slice people's necks, like heads off, like like a laser almost.
Oh no. Yeah, way.
So I thought that was really cool too, that your little hacking tool could be used as like a fucking like a laser whip on top of being something you just use to hack.
How much Keanu Reeves was in the demo?
Like a minute.
Okay. Apparently he's with you for like the whole game. Like apparently it's not like a bit part at all.
Yeah, it looks like it's like a Cortana thing from Halo almost, where he's like the AI living inside you. And like the only time they showed him in the demo, I guess because the demo was mostly combat focused, but he had to gain the trust of some leader of like a rival criminal group from the one that you were fighting. Mm-hmm. So he wanted him to plug in his consciousness essentially to the bad guy's database in order to like examine his background or whatever. And when he did that, like Keanu was popped up on the side and he was kind of giving little snarky commentary while he's uploading all of your personal information and stuff. So
how did they keep that secret? Like, how do they keep that big of an announcement secret to the point where nobody knows about it until he walks on stage, essentially, or until the trailer pans up to him? Like, he's been apparently working on this for a couple of years now. Like, I feel like this stuff just doesn't happen anymore where stuff like that's not leaked.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. I guess it helps that isn't CD Projekt Red, aren't they located like really, really?
They're Polish.
Yeah. So maybe they just had him hidden in Poland for a while. They just filmed John Wick in Poland all along.
Yeah. It's so funny now too that he's just like I feel like it's just Keanu Reeves, like every role that he has, like be it this or John Wick or whatever, like it just feels like it's just him, and he just like dresses the same outside of these roles as well.
Yeah, I know,
it's just so funny.
Yeah, I pretty much just see John Wick when I see him now. Maybe out of fear, I don't know.
Or like I read this article today about how like kids don't really know who he is, so they just call him Fortnite guy because they have the John Wick partnership in right, Fortnite. Yeah. I don't know, the whole announcement, it was breathtaking, if you will.
Majestic.
So based on what you've seen, based on what the buzz has been, do you think is Cyberpunk worth the $350 collector's edition?
You know, as long as it's not sold on the Square Enix store, I say go for it.
Hear that, Michaela? Hear that?
Maybe Keanu Reeves will give you a phone call and thank you personally for buying it.
Gosh, he's such a nice guy.
I've never heard anything bad about him, I don't think.
No. Did you get a chance to look at, I'm not sure if it was playable on the floor, but Watch Dogs Legion really impressed me.
Yeah, it was behind, I'm pretty sure it was a video demo, but that line was also so long and it was kind of hard to get to that I didn't see it. But
did you have an opportunity to watch the trailer?
Oh, yeah, I did. It just looked so, I mean, like Watch Dogs 2 already went in a kind of weird direction compared to Watch Dogs 1, but this one just seems completely...
It does. But that being said, I feel like I absolutely hated the first Watch Dogs, and I thought that Watch Dogs 2 was pretty wonderful. And this just, I feel like it's funny because I feel like the, like just thinking back to the presentation of the first Watch Dogs, like Ubisoft got so much flack because it was all fake or whatever. Like none of this stuff is actually like really possible and the game's actually pretty basic. But now I feel like this year, for instance, we saw a lot less gameplay than we typically do. Like a lot of these trailers were cinematics only or were very, you know, in-engine footage or whatever. And they had this huge gameplay demo and specifically stating at the bottom, you know, like pre-alpha gameplay, like the whole time they showed more game. It's ironic because they showed more gameplay for this game than almost any other game. And just the start of Watch Dogs was not like that at all. So I thought that was cool that they had this much to show off for real. And I was really impressed with, like, I can't, it seems so ambitious. There's got to be some weird system where it's not actually as capable as it seems. Essentially, for those who don't know, like, it seems like you're a group of hackers and you're trying to take back London, it seems like, in certain ways, but you can essentially recruit almost anybody out in the city to be a part of your team. And then they all have, they're all characters with stories and with goals and with different missions and everything like that. And you can just essentially get anyone to join you and then start playing as that character. And characters come on board and they die. And when they die, you don't get a game over. They're dead for real. And now you're another character and you have to try to accomplish what they were doing or whatever. And I can't say that I've seen anything like it before. And I just wonder like how are they doing this? Because it doesn't look possible.
Yeah, I know. It looks really, really ambitious, especially for like the third game in a series. Usually they kind of rest on their laurels a little bit, but it looks pretty wild. And it's funny, but because of a joke my friend made, I can't think of Watch Dogs now without thinking of Pokemon, because everyone is calling Watch Dogs a Brexit game. And so my friend earlier was calling Pokemon Poke-Brexit, or no, Poke-Dexit, he was saying. Because of, I don't know if you've read about the controversy. And it's funny because Pokemon is also based in the UK this time, like their version of it at least.
Okay, yeah.
And
what's the controversy? I've not heard of the controversy.
That during the treehouse, they kind of low key said that not all of the Pokemon are going to be in this game, or that you won't be able to transfer all of them from old games in this one. And you'll only be able to transfer whichever ones are native to these games.
Oh, so what are they? How far back are they going? What are they cutting off, or have they not detailed yet?
They haven't detailed it. And it's a mix. Like in the trailer, you can see there's actually an article on Geekscape where I tried to spot as many as I could and listed them. But it's like a pretty good mix of every game. But, you know, there's bound to be someone whose favorite is going to get cut. And
yeah, sure.
Considering, you know, the slogan of the game, gotta catch them all, and it just kind of,
you can't, yeah, not anymore.
So
we gotta pare it down. How many are there now? How many Pokemon are there?
Well, there's like 803 as of,
you can't catch that many. That's ridiculous.
I have, but that's beside the point. There's 803 as of Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, and they've already confirmed like 30 or 40 new ones for this one that we've seen.
Oh,
so
my gosh,
we're probably going to approach a total of about 900 by the time this one's over, I would guess, at least.
That's unbelievable. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, who's to say? But
so are you upset? Like, do you care that much about holding on to these old Pokemon? Like, are you upset about them leaving something behind? Or is it just an opportunity? Like how do you feel about this?
Well, to me, it is kind of upsetting to me because, for one, a lot of my favorite ones aren't super popular. So I know that some of mine will get cut, but even if my favorites didn't get cut and all of them were in it, I mean, that still sucks, man. Like in the previous games, they lit it, I think not in Sun and Moon, but in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, they went through the trouble of giving you a special reward if you showed them a Pokemon that you had taken from the original Ruby and Sapphire on Game Boy Advance and bounced it all the way up to Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. Like, and stuff like that. Like, it was kind of cool where, say, for example, when you beat the game with a Pokemon, they would give the Pokemon a ribbon, almost like an achievement before they were achievements.
Okay, yeah.
And it would be attached to that particular Pokemon, right? And then so when, say, if you got that ribbon in Diamond and Pearl, when you transferred it over to Black and White, it would still have that ribbon. And then you could get a new ribbon for Black and White with it. And then when you transferred it from Black and White to X and Y, it would have all those ribbons plus the new ones. And it was like a kind of like a cool thing. That kind of felt like it was...
So it's not just this character. There's like a history,
right,
with it.
And it's frustrating because they've acknowledged in the story in some of the games, or not even necessarily the story, but they've had like bonuses for people and rewards for people who've played the games that long and brought their favorites over for those many years. And then
Right. Now
it's like, oh, well, sorry, if we deem that yours isn't popular enough or isn't viable or whatever, then it's just not going to be in. And it's like, I would understand it more if they still made new character models every time a new Pokemon game came out, but they're pretty much have been using the same character models since X and Y, and that's been like,
that's true,
4 years ago now, 5 years ago. So it's not like...
So at that point, why not just put them in there?
Yeah, I mean, of course there's work that needs to be done because they need to adapt the new attack animations to the old animations that they had from the previous ones, and they have to, you know, up-res everything for the Switch. So it's not like there's no work and they could just copy-paste it, but they're also not working from scratch. So
yeah,
to me, it's just that Pokemon didn't used to be an annual series, but in recent years, it's become an annual series where we haven't had a year without a mainline Pokemon game. So I think it's just more than anything, I think it's just a matter of, oh, we have to have it out by holiday and we're not going to have time to get it all. So instead of having it on a 2-year schedule like it used to be, or even I think the longest gap between Pokemon games was a 4-year gap at one point. But, you know, instead of having a 2-year gap, we're just going to cut Pokemon. So it sucks, but, you know, I'm still buying it. What does it matter?
Oh, I pre-ordered it like a year ago. Yeah. So I just pre-order everything. It's not good.
Yeah. So do well, I pre-ordered every game that I wanted this year before my Best Buy discount membership expired.
Oh, is this when it ends?
Mine expired back in November, so I pre-ordered everything that I knew I was even mildly interested in.
Because you still get the deal as long as you were active when you
pre-ordered. Right, yeah. And then I figured if I change my mind, I could just cancel it later, but it's better than to want it later and not have the discount.
Totally. That's kind of what I do, because a few years ago, the E3 sales up here were very good. Like pretty much anything that got announced, you could grab on Amazon for like $50 plus tax, and games cost $80 plus tax here. So that's pretty good. I still have several, you know, I have like a Death Stranding and a Final Fantasy VII pre-order from like 2016 or 17 type thing. This year it was pretty disappointing. I mean, obviously there's no obligation for them to put anything on sale, but like Best Buy had, it was, you know, hey, come on this day and we're going to have like, all these games on sale, but they were super limited stock and they had like 10 titles total, for instance. I just happened to be getting home very, very late, so I could still take advantage. But yeah, it's basically like I pre-order anything that I have a slight interest in, and because you don't get they don't charge you till it ships, and you at that point have a locked in discounted copy. So as the time approaches, if I'm no longer interested in the game or whatever, you can just cancel it. So I feel like that's a very good way to do things. And I've saved hundreds of dollars over the years, probably enough to pay for my Cyberpunk 2077 Collector's Edition, Michaela.
See, so it's really not like, it's not spending money, it's rewarding yourself with everything you've saved.
It's kind of like a free, it's kind of like a free Collector's Edition is how I am thinking about it at this moment.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, hopefully others feel the same way.
With that, I don't want to go too long, but I would love to hear just real quick, like, what other cool stuff did you see or get to play?
Well, as far as cool stuff, the booths this year I thought were just phenomenal. The Final Fantasy VII one had like it was set up like the Shinra train and the Shinra building, and you could see the big reactor from the cover from the outside of the booth, so that was cool. Monster Hunter had the giant ice dragon from the new expansion that's coming out, which is like one of probably the coolest photo op they had at the whole convention. Luigi's Mansion's was probably the best booth though, because it was, have you ever been to Disneyland by chance?
Yes, but I don't remember it very well.
But do you remember the Haunted Mansion, how they had like the ghost projections and stuff?
Yeah, oh, I do. Yeah.
Yeah, so like the whole booth was like that. Like they had just the different ghosts bouncing around on against the walls and on behind these screens while you were playing. It was just a really cool setup. And on top of that, I think aside from Final Fantasy VII, I think Luigi's Mansion was probably my favorite game on the floor that I got to play.
I feel like that's unexpected how big that game became. Like I loved and everyone loved the first one, and then I feel like I don't remember there being that much buzz around the 3DS one when it came out, and now everyone's loving it again.
Yeah, like the 3DS one expanded on the mechanics so much, and this one, the demo that I played used the mechanics from the second one while adding a bunch of new mechanics for the third. So the game's getting more and more complex, but in a good way, I think. Like it's not too hard. It's not like you're lost or there's too many different button combinations to memorize or anything, but it's still just as easy to pick up and play, but it's hard to master to maximize the points you get and everything.
Sure.
And with all the new abilities that they've given him with Guigi and the plunger thing.
Guigi was hilarious.
Yeah, like that was really cool too. And it also gives you multiple ways to solve the same puzzles, because sometimes you could use Guigi to solve something and other times you could do it a different way.
Yeah, totally.
Like without using him, for example. So, I mean, that was really cool. Other than that, it's just hard to say, because every other game that was like a sequel, it was pretty much what you came to expect. So sure. It wasn't like anything that was super shocking. I think that's why Final Fantasy VII and Luigi being so expansive and so different compared to what they're based off of stood out so much with me for. Marvel Ultimate Alliance, because I wasn't expecting to get into any of the big games. So when I first got in, my priority was Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. And like visually it's not the greatest, but it's still so much fun to play with a group of four, and they have a pretty wide diverse cast of Marvel heroes this time too.
Cool. And it has local multiplayer, right? Like is it up to four player local?
Yeah, up to four player local.
That's awesome.
Local. And I was sad and happy at the same time, because it's better than nothing, I guess, but they had already confirmed like on Treehouse, they confirmed Luke Cage and Iron Fist and Daredevil had been confirmed already.
Sure.
So I was like, okay, cool. If Jessica Jones was in, that would be her first time playable in a game, and you could have all four Defenders. So I was happy. Like, as soon as you start playing, she's in the game with you, but she's an NPC. So,
Okay.
She's in it. She's in it. And she has the like the Kristen Ritter Netflix art style, character model.
Yeah.
But yeah, she doesn't. She gives some bullcrap excuse. Like, someone has to be around to protect the... protect the people on the streets while you guys are out fighting aliens and stuff.
Damn.
So yeah, so she's not playable, but at least she's in it. That's better than nothing. But yeah, aside from that, like, so many of the games that I played were like really great. Borderlands, Cyberpunk looked amazing, and yeah, just overall it was just a really good show. Despite how crowded it was, it somehow felt less hectic. Oh, and then one other thing I wanted to mention was that I got to sit down with Idea Factory, my Neptunia people I used to talk to all the time.
Yeah.
And they showed me this one game where it's like, it looks like Virtual On, the way that it plays.
Okay.
Like a fast-paced, like mech-style combat game. But instead, you're playing as battleships that are actually waifus. So they're based off of real, like, World War II naval battleships, but they're women who shoot missiles.
Yeah.
So,
Is there a collectivization of that that you can pre-order?
Not that they've mentioned, but I'm sure there will be. it's based on a really popular Chinese cell phone game. It's weird because I played a couple of these games that are like full games based off of cell phone games.
Yeah.
So we're kind of going backwards now. It's like before it'd be like, oh, like Pokemon's popular, let's make a bunch of mobile spin-offs.
Sure.
But now it's like, oh, this mobile game's really this free-to-play mobile game's really popular, let's make a fully priced console spin-off for it.
Wait, full circle, you know? That's crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty hilarious. Much.
After 3 days on the floor, is there something that you wish that you saw more of?
Most of it was, I mean, of course, I wish like Death Stranding would have been there, and it wasn't. Shenmue 3 was technically there, but it was behind closed doors, so we couldn't play that. But I think the one that was missing the most, that shocked me the most, was all mostly on Nintendo's side, and the biggest one was probably Shin Megami Tensei 5.
Okay.
Like, that game was announced. Remember back when we did that live stream with Geekscape Games when they were doing the Switch press conference when they announced the release date?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
That same press conference announced that Shin Megami Tensei 5 was coming for Switch. And that's we thought Final Fantasy 7 was bad. That was the last time we heard about that game.
That's fair. That's crazy. Yeah, here we are with nothing.
Like, the final Splatfest on Splatoon 2 is like ripped straight from a Shin Megami Tensei plotline with the Chaos versus Order thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, man, like, they have to show us something. And no, that's absolutely nothing. I was also shocked that we still haven't really heard anything on what Microsoft and Nintendo are going to be doing together. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we've heard hints of it, and there was those rumors around GDC, and it's like, at this point, we almost can confirm that there's something, but they just haven't said anything yet.
Yeah. Well, and I could see, it would be cool to see, I mean, speculatively, there was just something today where I think, based on Phil Spencer's Giant Bomb interview last night, like, they said they're open to doing something like a Game Pass on this Switch. But I could also see, like, how great of a like an xCloud client would the Nintendo Switch be as well. Like, that would be like, it's just this great, it's got a good screen, the controllers are fairly comfortable when you're connected there, like, it feels more substantial than like holding an Xbox controller and clipping your phone to it. Like, it feels more like a real console. So I could definitely see like xCloud having capabilities on the Nintendo Switch or something like that.
Right. And yeah, just like, and as far as other stuff that was missing, just a lot of the Switch stuff, like, they have so many great games coming out, but you wouldn't know it because they didn't really do a good job advertising it in typical Nintendo fashion.
Yeah,
but you have, you know, you have Astral Chain that's coming out in like a month and a half from Platinum Games. It looks fantastic, but I think they've only ever shown it twice, and it wasn't on the show floor at E3.
Okay.
Even though it was in their direct. But yeah, just like a lot of small things like that. But the biggest omission was probably Shin Megami, like I had mentioned.
Yeah.
And but one thing too, as far as favorite things, it also wasn't playable, but I almost forgot to mention, I wanted to make sure to talk about it, that they announced the Panzer Dragoon remake for Switch.
Right,
that was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was talking about, you know, Banjo and everything, and the Breath of the Wild 2, and, you know, justifiably so, but I think the one that I got the most excited for, and that I was like cheering at the screen over, was when the dragon's face came up on the screen, and you know, their dragon designs are very distinct, so you knew immediately, like, oh my god, it's Panzer Dragoon. That just completely blew me away. So
out of nowhere, that was a surprise announcement. And I feel like I've never actually played, I didn't play Saga, or what was there's Panzer Dragoon Orta or something,
Orta for Xbox.
I'd never played that. Like, I've not experienced the series, and it's this beloved series, so I am definitely looking forward to checking it out once the Switch version comes out. I feel like for me, I wish that Microsoft's conference was jam-packed. I don't know how, it didn't feel like there was room to add anything else aside from just making the show longer, but I wish that they didn't really say anything about Project X Cloud, which I feel like is their next big, big initiative. They didn't really talk about it at all, and so you're reading impressions based on just all these outlets that are playing it, which is cool, and I'm glad that they were demoing it there, but I would have liked to see just some sort of hype video or something for it, talking about the what they're getting latency wise or something like that. And we're at the point where they're 4 months away from doing public trials. They said public trials will start happening in October, and we don't know about pricing in terms of, they said you can turn your own Xbox into an xCloud server for free, but you know, what if you have a small data cap, or you don't have the greatest upload speed at home or something like that? Like, what's it going to be to use Microsoft servers for this? Is it going to be a part of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate? Like, there's so many questions there still. I feel like that was a big one for me. And then it was weird not having Sony there at this point. Sony, like, last year they had a weird, you know, it was a pretty weird conference itself, if you can even really call it that. It was a neat experience, and you know, a couple of the games at least that they showed off at that point have come out and have been celebrated and have been loved. Spider-Man was one of the best games I played last year, but how can it be another E3 and we don't see anything new about The Last of Us 2 or something like that, which rumor wise is almost done or something? Like, how can you not be there to talk about it? And like, what is the benefit of that? Like, if they're trying to hold their cards for the next gen announcements, like, you know, it's not Nintendo, but Microsoft, I mean, they teased things a little bit with their video, but there's still so much under wraps. And all that did was bring up some hype for next year. Like, E3 is the biggest time for video games, and you see the biggest amount of coverage during this week. And to not be there felt weird. And now it's another year until the next one. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think they're trying to go more towards a Nintendo Direct style promotional tactic, but still, I feel like this year is going to be overall a light year for them. So they probably just figured it's more worth it to not spend the money to be there when they don't have much to show.
But why not drop a trailer or something on YouTube? Like, don't just not exist during this week. Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. And that's another one that I'm shocked that wasn't there, though, is Last of Us wasn't present at all. From no trailer, no release date announcement, no anything. And from what we know, it's supposedly almost done, so I don't know what's going on.
And that's like one of those super hype games. Like, if that has any sort of present, you know, that's the type of game where they're not there, but a trailer drops, like, people are stopping to watch it. Like, very few titles have as much hype as The Last of Us 2 does. And I think rightly so. Like, it's a pretty incredible, the first game was so incredible, in my opinion. I think you were kind of mixed on it.
Yeah, I was mixed.
You were kind of mixed on it. I really loved it.
I was the unpopular one.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like you just love these characters. So for them to come back, which I never expected, is amazing. So that being said, the hype, I think, for that game is at the maximum. So, you know, what does really, aside from showing their hand, aside from giving more details, do they really need to at this point? It's kind of a double-edged sword there, I guess.
Right.
Crystal Chronicles for phones, I did want to mention, just because I played a little bit of Crystal Chronicles ages and ages and ages ago, and I feel like it was so cool. If they do this phone version well, I feel like it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was coming out on phones until I saw a trailer play while I was waiting for Avengers, so that was...
And that didn't have a release date or anything, right? It was just like a teaser, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Is there anything else that you want to talk about E3, or are you ready to wrap up?
No, I think we covered most of it. I just had an excellent time. It was just so much fun being able to check out so many games. There's so much that I'm excited about. I feel like it's a real good time to be an Xbox, Switch, PlayStation owner. Like, everything, you know, everything that you could ever want's coming out on pretty much every system. So, you know, it hasn't been a better time to be into games.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I loved like
the last couple of years.
We're getting so open at this point too, like with things like cross play starting to happen and things like cross progression starting to happen. I think the most used phrase at the Microsoft convention was like, "We want you to play the games you want to play wherever you want to play them with whoever you want to play them with." Like just the idea of this stuff opening up in what's traditionally such a closed ecosystem, I think is super cool. And it's going to be a crazy generation where, you know, I can imagine regardless of the game, like right now it seems to just be these big games, but regardless of the game, like, oh, you have this game on PlayStation, I have it on Xbox, I'll see you online. Like it just doesn't matter. And that's super cool. But now, although now with on the PC side, you've got that starting up with the
Origin
the
Epic and Store Steam.
And everything like that. But, and everyone's got their own streaming service now. So
it was funny too. Speaking of that, there was an advertisement for Borderlands that said like exclusively for, I think it was Epic, on Epic Store. And then it had an arrow pointing to the psycho and it said, blame this guy, it's not our fault, or something like that.
Because it's like one of those things where these games are getting announced, like watching these games get announced, and then you just see the comments are just so negative about, you know, having to have a different client. And I mean, there's a lot of, I think there's some privacy stuff in regards to the Epic Store. And obviously, it's not a platform that's been around for years and years and years. So in terms of features, it has significantly less than Steam does. But it seems like any game that gets announced on Epic at this point, all of the comments are just like, well, I guess I'm not playing this game. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's crazy. All right, though. This has been E3 week, and I'm disappointed that it's over, but I'm glad that it happened, and I'm glad that you were here to record this episode with me, Josh. So thank you so much for coming on board.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And the good news is now that E3 is over, though, each day that past E3 is a day closer to being able to actually play these games, right?
That's true. And I mean, a lot of these games earlier this week, we didn't know they existed, and now we do, and I've already pre-ordered them. So so there's that.
Just hopefully Michaela finds out sometime soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully her listening to this episode isn't the first time she learns of this.
Yeah, our schedules are pretty opposite, so we'll see. Maybe that'll be an easier way to break it to her. I'm not sure. if you don't hear from me again, you'll know what happened. But yeah, this has been a special episode of Xbox Game Passengers. If you are new to this show, thank you for sticking around. What we usually do is each and every episode, myself and a guest will dissect and discuss a single game available on Microsoft's Game Pass service. And it's a game that was chosen for us completely at random. So whether it's magical or horrible, we'll force ourselves through it. We'll share our thoughts and we'll let you know whether or not the game is worth your time. At the end of every episode, we pick the game for the following episode too, so you always know what's coming up. I've had a blast making this show so far, and I've received a few messages about people really enjoying it. So if you are enjoying it, let me know. You can tweet me at @dcranevelt. We have a Twitter at @xgppodcast. Josh has his own Twitter. He's over at Inu Joshua. That's like an Inu Yasha, but adjusted to be Joshua instead. Yeah, if you like the show, anything you can do to get us out there, we are growing, and you know, we want to keep growing. So whether it's a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, share it with a single friend that you think might enjoy it. There's lots of cool stuff coming down the pipeline, and we've had a blast making these episodes this week and every regular episode too. Josh, we would love to have you on board for a regular episode sometime as well.
Oh yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Cool. Awesome. Anything you want to say before we shut her down?
No, just glad to be back on with you talking about games again, like the old days. So, you know, really happy to see you, you know, doing awesome. This podcast and being able to just have fun with everything and being able to dig into hopefully mostly good games, or at least so bad they're good.
Yeah, there's been a bit of both so far. But yeah, if you've missed the episode that just posted yesterday, John and I played through The Hunter Call of the Wild. Jump back for that, and we'll be back with another regular episode just 2 Wednesdays from now. And with that, this has been our E3 wrap-up. Thanks again, Josh, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.